Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to When in Romance, where we get to talk about all the good things that romance novels are for, or something like that. I don't know. It's the first episode of the fiscal year. Anyway.
Fair.
I am Jess.
And I am Trisha, and my fiscal year actually starts October 1st. So, but happy new year to you, Jess.
Thank you. Thank you. We are recording on Thursday, July 6th. It's been the longest short week ever, but I am happy to be here with you.
I am happy to be here, too. And Jess, listeners don't know this, but you needed a couple of extra minutes before we started, which was actually really great because it allowed me to spy on the people in my parking lot. There's this person in my building who is, I want to say, like, early 20s, maybe in college, maybe just, like, finished it up. I live in a college town. And that person was definitely standing by their car chatting with another person, like, in that way that you do when you're, like, kind of flirting and, like, one person's going to leave, but the other person is, I don't know. I've been watching them now in a non-creepy way. It just happens to be the case that my desks face out the window into the parking lot. It's normally very boring, but I don't know. I'm hoping some things work out for these two. We'll see what happens.
Fingers crossed. Sending them good vibes.
Yeah, and someone else in my building is moving. There's been a lot going on here in my parking lot for the last couple of days. So I'll keep you all posted and let you know how it goes.
Definitely have to.
But in terms of fictional romances that I am not creepily observing from my parking lot, as always, Jessica Pride, I am wondering what you are reading.
Well, I am doing the slowest listen ever of We Could Be So Good, Kat Sebastian's most recent book. I have only been listening to it in the car because I haven't really found any projects that I could actually do in the house that I could focus my listening closely enough on. And I only go into the office a couple times a week, so I'm only like maybe 30% into the book. But if you're unfamiliar with We Could Be So Good, it is Kat's first traditionally published mid-century historical romance, the middle of the 20th century. She has a couple that she self-published, but the rest of her traditionally published books are Regencies. And this one is about two newspaper guys in the late 50s in New York. And one is very like a Brooklyn Italian boy, and the other one went to boarding school in New England, right? So the one who went to boarding school is going to end up running the newspaper, but he is hopeless. Like, if you were reading it, if they existed now, he would be diagnosed with ADHD. He's always losing his keys. He can't keep up with anything. So Nick, the other guy, kind of like takes to looking after him, and they become really good friends, and eventually they will become really good more. So I'm looking forward to continuing that. Joel Leslie narrates the audiobook, and it's one of the reasons, even though I'm staring at my print copy of the book right now, once I started listening to the audio, it was like, I cannot consume this book in any other way. Joel Leslie's narration is so good. And he has like these really great voices for each of the characters. You have to check it out if you are an audiobook kind of person.
Sounds like it might even convert those of us who are not traditionally audiobook persons.
It could.
Everything about it sounds delightful.
It's so good. I love it. What are you reading, Trisha?
Fair question. So I will say this. I had a stretch of time in the spring where I was very much kind of in a reading slump, mm-hmm. where I would like read a little bit here and there for the podcast mostly, but a lot of what I was reading was rereading. Mm. Sometime in the last 2 to 4 weeks, I don't know, something snapped. And like, I have been just inhaling all kinds of different books. We'll talk about some of them today or next time. But the one that I just picked up within the last day or two, I'm only about 20-25% of the way through, but it's the book Single Dad's Club by Therese Bihari, just published about a month ago in June. I always forget that Bihari's books are set in South Africa, and then I'm always delighted to find that they are set in South Africa. I believe that is where she lives. And as the title would suggest, the book is about a single dad. He has like a baby. Like this baby is maybe 2 months old. Like this is a really little baby. He had it, the baby, what is a nice way to say the baby came from a one night stand? I don't know. that's what happened.
I mean?
Yes. So the father, Rowan, had a one night stand and the mom became pregnant. They decided to have the baby, but they are not a couple. They decided that they would, that they were better kind of as co-parents and as friends and as roommates, which gets a little complicated. Mm. So they are raising this baby. They moved to a new small town to be closer to Rowan's grandmother to help out with the baby, but they don't know anyone there until they meet Delilah. He meets Delilah, who is a barista / babysitter / personal assistant / kind of, she is actually hasn't been there that long herself, only about a year and a half. But she kind of instantly recognizes, first of all, that she is very into Rowan. She thinks he's super hot and she thinks the baby is adorable. But also, she can tell that he is struggling. He is struggling with being a new parent. I don't know if it's necessarily considered postpartum depression if you are not the birthing parent, but he's definitely dealing with this massive change in his life and what it has, the kind of impact that it has had on his mental health. And so she starts realizing that he needs to kind of be introduced to some of the other parents in the community. And so, like, she is trying to help him while also being super into him. And he is falling for her while also living with the mother of his baby. It seems like it's getting very complicated, but that just means that I am having a harder and harder time putting it down. Mm-hmm. So that is Single Dad's Club by Therese Bihari. I recommend so far. I'll keep you posted.
Awesome. I look forward to hearing more about it. I am like 3 or 4 books behind on when it comes to Bihari, and that one, like, I've seen it, and every time I see it, I go, I need to read that. And then, of course, I don't, because that is the name of my memoir. I need to read that.
Yes. Well, and for what it's worth, this one is the first, if I think it's going to be a series. It looks on some of the sites like Goodreads that might be a series, but for what it's worth, so far it stands alone. So if you or anyone who is listening wants to be able to pick up a book by Bihari, this one's easy. You just pick it up, read it for yourself.
Awesome.
It can be great.
All right. Well, before we move on.
Speaking of books.
Yeah.
As totally. We sometimes do here.
What do S.A. Cosby, Khaled Hosseini, Sarah Bakewell, and Yadon Israel have in common? They've all been guests on Book Riot's newest podcast, First Edition, where BookRiot.com co-founder Jeff O'Neill explores the wide bookish world. You can subscribe to hear them and stay to hear Book Riot's editors pick the It Book of the Month. To find it, you can just search First Edition in your podcast player of choice. So check out First Edition, featuring our co-founder, Jeff O'Neill.
Indeed. All right, we have a lot to cover today. I say we take a quick break and then jump back in. How does that sound?
Excellent.
And since you and I are the only ones who matter in this particular moment, that's what we'll do. All right, we got a couple of little follow-up things, and then we're going to chat about something that you wrote about recently, Jess, but I'm going to let you follow up first.
All right. So a couple episodes ago, we talked about sports romance and particularly dug into basketball romance, and I realized just before we recorded last time and then forgot that I had another book to talk about. Play It Forward by Frederick Smith, who's a great friend of the podcast, is a book that I read a couple years ago and just sort of forgot it existed because my mind is a sieve. But if you, we were talking about how there isn't a lot of queer basketball in romance. And if you wanted to experience a queer black romance featuring an NBA player, Play It Forward by Frederick Smith is a book that you could get you started. So check that one out.
And we will link to it in our show notes. Like you mentioned, Frederick Smith is a friend of the pod, so always nice when we can recommend a book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a quick follow-up. I had a conversation with a dear friend of mine who is also a friend of the podcast and a friend of books and libraries. My friend Faith and I were chatting recently, and she mentioned that she had listened to the episode where we were talking about the most influential romances of the last decade. And she was saying that she had had some conversations with friends and colleagues of hers and wanted to offer a little bit of a defense, not necessarily of Colleen Hoover's books. I hope I'm not getting this wrong. She can let me know if I am. But more of kind of the impact that Colleen Hoover has had, which is to say, which that was what the list was, so very fair, which is to say that Colleen Hoover's books and kind of presence in the book world has opened the door to people being able to look for additional books, right? As a librarian, even as a school librarian, I believe she, I don't think she would mind my saying, she works with fifth and sixth graders. Even students who are fairly young have seen some of this dialogue, seen some of these titles, and they will ask Faith, you know, do you have this book? And she will say, well, we don't have that book in this library because you are 11 years old. But let me recommend this other book that I, as a professional, can recommend to you that has sort of a similar level of drama or a similar level of something. So I think the point, and again, I apologize if I'm sort of misrepresenting this, but I think the point is one that we maybe didn't hit super hard in that episode. But when people have a language or a comparison or something that helps them to explain to a librarian or a bookseller or some kind of professional sort of what they're looking for, and it helps that them get connected to a new and different kind of book, there is something to be said for that. And I think it is worth noting that, you know, Colleen Hoover has certainly played a role in that. So credit where it's due. And I mean, honestly, I think I put her at like number three. So we're already giving her some level of credit. But I do think that was a fair point. So it seemed worth mentioning. And I think our last bit of just kind of quick follow-up is that we did our spring, let's call it spring. It was June, but still, that's technically still spring.
Yeah.
Book club book. It was great. We were excited about it. We liked it very much. But it's going to be time, sooner rather than later, for us to do our summer book club. Oh, boy. Feels like, I was like, can that possibly be true? Yeah, I guess September is technically sort of summer. Whatever. It's fine. Q3.
Yes. Summer does not end in September here. So we're good.
Yeah, especially where you live. Yeah. Our Q3 book club book. So as always, if anyone has any thoughts or recommendations or suggestions, either for a specific title or a type of book that you feel like we haven't covered or we haven't done recently, let us know. I feel like that's the announcement. That's the thing.
Yep. We look forward to hearing your thoughts.
Indeed, we do. And now that we have done all of our kind of checking in and housekeeping and whatnot, Jess, you recently did a post for Book Riot about what Regency romance is not, why it is so popular. And I thought it might be an interesting thing, you know, I think a lot of our listeners read the site and have the opportunity to kind of dive into the different things that people write. I don't know that everyone catches everything. Mm-hmm. And I thought we might be able to kind of talk in a little bit of a different way or with a slightly different dimension about Regency romance. I thought your piece was really good. I will link to it in the show notes for anybody who didn't have a chance to catch it. But it also seemed like you did a fair amount of research. I don't know if you learned new things because it feels like you know everything all of the time, generally. So it might not be that you learned anything new. I learned new things by reading it. But I was just wondering if you wanted to talk a little bit about kind of the way that you approach the topic and what you think of Regency romance and why it is so popular.
Absolutely. And I will start by saying I love Regency romance. Like, I don't read it very much anymore, in part because it does require a little bit of world-building attachment, and sometimes you don't want to have to think that hard. And I will say that when I started writing this, it was going to be around maybe 800 to 1,000 words, and it did not end up being that. I'm very sorry.
I feel like it's longer than that. I mean, it might be more words than that, Jess.
I think it's the longest thing I've ever written for book writing.
Yeah, it didn't feel long. Like, it felt, I thought, at least not to me. You know, to each their own. But yeah, I'm glad that I would have felt cheated if you had only written 800 words. So thank you for taking that extra time.
I do what I can. And I wanted to not only talk about sort of why Regency romance in particular, as opposed to Victorian, as opposed to American Western, or any of those things, why that's the most frequented space for historical romance. I wanted to actually discuss how it came about. Like, what is the Regency? Because the Regency was literally a 9-year period, and somehow we have more dukes than, like I said in the post, the current population of Rhode Island.
Yeah, that blew my mind. Also, the fact that it was a 9-year period, I was like, that, I trust Jess, but that can't possibly be right. And then I was like, no, she's right. It is what it is.
And, you know, when we talk about the Regency, some authors have started writing a little more in late Regency, which is like the 1820s. And some of what you might consider technically Georgian is still part of that sort of like overarching Regency period. So I did learn that, because I knew that the Regency was like that 9-year period, but I didn't think about the fact that when particular people are talking about the Regency, they basically mean from the madness of George III to Victoria's coronation. So that's that's a little bit longer. But most of the books that we read that are Regency set are literally Regency set. Like, they're coming back from Napoleonic Wars. They're wearing very narrow dresses. They're, like, it's very Regency.
Yeah. Yeah, when you wrote that the Industrial Revolution hadn't yet made it to London, I was like, wait, these are and it reminded me of something you told me once when I was having a hard time distinguishing between Regency and Victorian, which is look for the trains. I was like, oh yeah, because the Industrial Revolution came and so did trains.
Yep.
But yeah, so I mean, so you established kind of what the period, and then talked and thought a little bit about why this 9-year period, which I think is a really interesting question.
Yeah, and like, there is a longer answer, obviously, but like, the main thing that it comes out of is two of our like past romance greats, and that is Jane Austen and Georgette Heyer. And as I mentioned in the piece, Georgette Heyer is her own can of worms that we can talk about or not talk about some other time. But so you have Jane Austen. Pride and Prejudice was published in 1812. I know that that wasn't her first book, but it's probably her most lasting book. Even if you haven't read all of Jane Austen's books, you're more likely to have experienced Pride and Prejudice either through print or film or television or fan fiction or something, right? Or romance retellings, honestly.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, and like, also name me another Austen hero who you can name with like that Colin Firth wet shirt scene. Like, I mean, name me any other. First of all, name me another Austen hero you can name at all, which many of you can. I get that. I know. But if you were a member of the general public, Fitzwilliam Darcy is probably, even if you only know him as Mr. Darcy, probably the one that people would name.
So that's the Jane Austen thing. And that's that very time period. And then Georgette Heyer in the 20th century, who is like considered the beginning of modern romance novels as we know them, was like, I like this period. I think we should take Jane Austen's time and elevate them. None of this poor landed gentry. They have to be aristocrats. So she wrote Our First Duke, and they've been happening ever since.
Many, many, many times.
Yes.
Many, many, many times. Yeah, which I think is interesting, too. As I was reading your, and I want to get into some of the authors that you talked with as well, but it was interesting to read your piece, because I know that there are people that have very strong feelings about historical romance, very strong feelings about being more into historical or less into historical or not reading historical. I don't know. I would be interested if this is true of other people. I don't know that I necessarily make a decision about a romance related to whether it's historical or contemporary, mm-hmm. which sounds a little silly. And I'm sure that there is some part of my brain that is making that distinction. But I think I'm much more likely to make a decision about a historical based on whether it's fantasy or sci-fi or like romantic suspense versus romantic, like contemporary versus historical. It feels to me like it's kind of like deciding whether you're going to read a small town romance or one set in Chicago, you know? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Again, I have to think that through a little bit more because I'm probably wrong, but it is interesting to think about what it is that people get excited about with that time period. I will say one of the observations that I've made, and I'd be interested in your thoughts on this, Jess, is that sometimes it feels like the conflict or the dark moment is a little more authentic in a historical romance because the circumstances can play a pretty major role. Whereas in a contemporary romance, it might be like, there was this misunderstanding about this person having an affair with their coworker, and then they talked about it and it was fine. Mm-hmm. Whereas in historical romance, it might be like, well, if she leaves and goes and marries this person, she will be ruined. Mm-hmm. But maybe love is enough. So, but I don't know. I'd be interested in whether other people have stronger feelings about the difference between the two.
I think that there are some like fluffy misunderstanding type plots that can happen in historicals. But yeah, like sometimes the stakes are pushed a little higher because of social stratum and everything else that really like affects the people in a different way than they do in a contemporary. And, you know, like danger, like somebody gets shot in the Regency, they might not live.
Like, there's not like a trauma one center just down the street with an ambulance that can take them there. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, well, and you actually had the opportunity. I'm guessing everyone wanted to talk to you because you're such a big deal. But you talked to a variety of different writers about why they write Regency romance and why they think it has appeal. Was there anything in that experience of talking with those folks that really stuck out to you?
Oh my gosh, it was just amazing that they responded to my emails at all. But also,
I could not be less surprised that they wanted to talk with you. But sorry, continue.
But like, there were a lot of capital T thoughts, and I wish that I could have published everything that everyone had to say because they had such great things, and I had to sort of narrow down quotes and really like shrink down everything that they were saying besides what I quoted into something that still managed to be understandable. And I think Liana, who I think was also the first person to respond, Liana De La Rosa, who has a history of writing Regency romances and publishing them on her own, who has now published Victorian romance with Berkeley. And she mentioned that a lot of what she thinks the reason that people are drawn to it is because of the rose-colored glasses, which totally made sense. But then she actually got her friend Elizabeth Bright to talk to her, and she sent me both of their responses. And Elizabeth mentioned that there are things that you can talk about in historicals that you can be a little more both subtle and didactic with that are harder to do in contemporary romances. And I hadn't even really thought about that. Like, it's you read about, you know, sort of the plight of the feminist woman in 1814. And you can talk about a lot of things there that talking about them in a contemporary romance would leave some people who are not looking for, I'm using air quotes, politics in their romances, would be like, why are we talking about this? Why can't they just be two people falling in love, right? So that was interesting to think about, because while I'm sure that that was something that was somewhere in my brain, it hadn't really come forward as a clear thought. So now I'm going to be thinking about that every time I read a Regency romance.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I'm interested generally sort of if you have other thoughts, but I think we've had this whole conversation and we have not clarified where are you mentioned that you have read and loved Regency romance.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like a top genre? Is it enough that it draws you to a book, or is it just that you have come across enough books that happen to be of interest to you that are Regency romances? Kind of like, I'm interested in where you are, like kind of what made you want to write this?
I really do enjoy Regency romances. I haven't been reading a whole lot this year and the past few years, like I've mentioned, but I think if you went like my top two subgenres, but not really subgenres, contemporary romance would be number one because they're the mm-hmm. easiest to pick up. And then historical mm-hmm. of any kind would be number two. So like mm-hmm. romance with real people on Earth are the things that I love most.
Who aren't getting murdered?
Yeah.
Is that because, yeah, who aren't running from the law?
Yeah, yeah. I don't want them to be shooting people or getting shot at for the most part. Although sometimes. I would actually probably be more inclined to read that kind of thing set in a historical romance than I would in a contemporary one.
Interesting. Yeah.
I'll read historical lawmen, but most of them are Beverly Jenkins' lawmen. So that's like a sure. completely different category. And one of the things is I've gotten to know the types of Regency authors that everyone knows. I love Sarah McLean. I love Loretta Chase. You know, all of these mm-hmm. people who are very familiar if you are a common mm-hmm. Regency reader. So what I have to work at regularly is to make sure that I am reading more broadly in Regency. Like, you know, mm-hmm. you and I always talk about trying to read more broadly in romance
yeah.
as a whole. But just reading, like, there are people I know who only read Regency romance. And if they read a book mm-hmm. a day, they could keep reading Regency romance forever. I am not that person, but
yes, fair.
But I'm trying to read, you know, more than just those Regency authors who everyone knows. That is the work that I'm kind of doing now. And it's not really work because it's still fun. And I'm still going back to read, you know, various people that I might have only read one book by them, even if they have several, like
mm-hmm.
Ava Lay. I've read two of her books. I need to go back and read yeah. all of them. Sophie Jordan, so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much that's happening in Regency. Like, if you look at Vanessa Riley's work and you look at her
yeah.
historical fiction, you can see mm-hmm. how much work she's put into just sort of like building these worlds as accurately as she can while still maintaining the Regency alternate universe reality thing. Because mm-hmm. I didn't talk about it much here, but I very much talk about in the article how the real Regency and the romance Regency aren't really the same thing.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I would very, very highly, like I said, I will make sure that there's a link in the show notes. I would highly recommend that folks take a look at Jess's post because there are also... Yeah, we didn't get into every piece of it. There's a very good point that you make about why, even though a lot of Regency authors are American, a lot of what is happening is the British aristocracy. And as you mentioned, the short answer is slavery and the role that it was playing here in the U.S. at that time. So I think, yeah, again, I would highly, highly recommend that folks take a look. And we didn't necessarily just offer a few different book recommendations, but if you go into the post, you'll see others. So... Mm-hmm. Anything else that you want to mention about this before we take another break, Jess?
I don't have a good way to wrap this up. If you have any questions about, or if you see something that I wrote that is not actually correct, please, please let me know. Because yes. I did my due diligence, but there could always be something that I did not find that counteracts something that I talked about either historically about the origin of the romance or anything else like that. I just want to put that out there because I am pretty sure that I did real good, but there's always a chance for mistakes.
And whether or not Jess made them, I'm pretty sure she didn't. But let us know if she did. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, Jess, thank you so much for your more than 800 words on Regency Romance. We really appreciate it. We will take a quick break and then we'll talk a little bit about some things that we're excited about that are coming up. All right. So about this time of year, every year, we talk about some of the books that we have loved so far in the year. And we talk about some that we are excited about. We realized we weren't quite ready to talk about the books that we have loved so far this year, although there are many.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured we would actually start and talk this episode about some of the books coming out in the second half of the year that we are jazzed about. So, Jess, why don't you kick it off?
All right. So the closest book that I'm excited about that I actually already have my copy of, but you all won't be able to get it until the 11th, which I think as of you listening to this would be the following day if you're listening to it on Monday.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's tomorrow. You're fine.
Is It Happened One Fight by Maureen Lee Lenker. And if that name is familiar, even though this, I think, might be a debut novel, I might be wrong. It's because Maureen has been an amazing advocate for romance for Entertainment Weekly. And she is a great voice on whatever social media site you are currently using.
Could be many.
But this one is a romantic comedy set in the 1930s in Hollywood. And I gotta tell you, I love the fact that we are getting more and more sort of whatever the time is between the wars. It's technically pre-war, but it's not pre, I don't know. I'm glad that we're getting so many books set in the 20th century, but like not World War II. Is basically what I'm saying.
Yes.
And I love a good Hollywood book in any time period. So I am very excited to read this one. And I'm sure that Maureen, having so much experience reading romance novels and writing about them, has given us a cracker, I'm pretty sure. So I'm looking forward to that. That's It Happened One Fight. And if you can't tell, it is definitely a enemies-ish to other things-ish. So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. They should have enemies-ish to other things-ish. They should have had you blurb it, Jess. I don't know what they were thinking.
It should just go right across the middle there.
It should. And if you cannot wait a full 24 hours for that book, I will tell you the first book that I'm going to talk about is actually out already, but because it came out July 1st, I'm still counting it as second half of the year. And that is First Time for Everything by Mina V. Esguerra. And it is about, it's interesting because this is a COVID / post-COVID romance. It starts out during lockdown. It's a couple of good friends who are in the same place. They are, again, in the same small space and some things start to happen, but then do not happen. One of the characters is sort of uncomfortable and stops the sexual shenanigans as they are getting started. But then a couple of years later, these are two people that have been friends forever and ever. And so a couple of years later, she calls the other main character. So Sabrina is the one who kind of put the brakes on. A couple of years later, calls Victor and says, hey, actually, do you want to try again? Maybe. Try all of the things again. And there are a few things about this book that I am very excited about. It downloaded on my Kindle at midnight Eastern time on July 1st. So I was really excited to see it. These are a couple of things that I really like. It's a friends to lovers romance. It is an older couple. She, at the beginning of the book, is in her late 30s, I believe. Then as a couple of years progress, she's in her early 40s. It's just, it seems like, and I will actually say, I have actually not read, I don't think anything by this author. Surprisingly, this book is only 140 pages. Because if I'm not mistaken, Jess, Mina Esguerra has a history of writing very long books. Am I thinking of someone else?
No. She, like, I don't know if I would say all of her books have been really long, but 140 is definitely short for her.
Yeah. So especially now that I'm realizing that this book is only 100, I read a different book that we'll talk about maybe on the next episode that also came out July 1st, or hit my Kindle at least on July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't read this one yet, but I am very excited to get into it. Again, that is First Time for Everything by Mina V. Esquera. And I will let you know how it goes.
I look forward to hearing that.
What else you got, Jess?
So speaking of reading more broadly in new authors and Regency, this book is actually not Regency, but the author has written Regency stuff. The Duke Gets Desperate by Diana Quincy comes out in September. And I gotta tell you, I might read this book before then. I don't read ahead.
You don't do that. That's not your thing. Yeah.
But I'm so excited about this one. Diana Quincy is one of those Regency authors that I discovered, sort of didn't really think about, and then devoured multiple books within a few days. And this one is the start of a new series called Sirens in Silk. And this one is Victorian era. The main female character is an Arab American woman who inherits a sort of rundown castle thing when the new duke has expected to receive it as part of his inheritance. You know, he's been planning, like, restoring it to its former glory and all of this stuff. And then he discovers that his father has left it to his stepmother, who then dies. So then Raya inherits it. So so she's like, all right, well, I guess I'll go check out this castle. And then there's this duke there who's like, actually, this is supposed to be mine. This is my birthright. And then they have chemistry. So other things happen.
Oh, other things, you say? Interesting.
Other things. Look, the first line in the description is, Diana Quincy returns with a steamy affair. So, like, you know things are going to happen.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yeah. It's a first book in a, like, you could pick that one up. You don't have to have read anything else.
Correct.
As far as you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Excellent. Good to know. I should look forward to September 26th. All right. Mine that is next out will not surprise anyone. It's Iris Kelly Doesn't Date by Ashley Herring Blake. It's not out till October 24th. This is a good opportunity if you have not read the other books in this series so far. It's the Bright Falls series. It started with Delilah Green Doesn't Care, Astrid Parker Doesn't Fail. The third book in what seems like it's going to be a trilogy is Iris Kelly Doesn't Date. And I just love this series. Like, I will tell you what the book is about. It is essentially a fake dating book where Iris, you've seen Iris in the first two books. Often she is dating someone, but, you know, not always. And she, it turns out at the beginning of this book, is very lonely. She has a sort of failed one night stand and then finds out that that person is going to be in a play with her. And they, for some reason, she wants to fake date. The other person does. It's a whole thing. Honestly, I didn't even really care what the description was, because the feel of these books, like the feel of this series and the way that Ashley Herring Blake writes is just so, it's like you absolutely understand all of the emotions that these characters are going through because of the way that they're written.
Mm-hmm.
And when they are sad and lonely, you feel it. Like it's a way that you actually kind of, Blake has this just ability to make you experience what the characters are experiencing,
mm-hmm.
both for good and bad, in a way that I think is really unique. There are some authors that can pull it off, but I honestly think that Ashley Herring Blake is one of the best at that particular skill that I have come across in the last few years. And it's just kind of, you actually genuinely live, not just in the world, but in kind of the experiences of these characters. And so I am very excited to get to return to that experience. And so I might read Iris Kelly Doesn't Date a little early. We'll see. Mm. It doesn't come out till October. If I can't wait that long, I might see if I can come across a little bit of an early copy. We'll see how it goes. But regardless, mark your calendars, pre-order, etc., whatever you got to do. Because in the meantime, if you haven't read the first two books in this series, I highly, highly recommend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am one of those people who I think I read like the first 7 pages of Delilah Green and then got distracted and then forgot to go back. Happens. So I gotta get on that because
you got some time.
I've loved Ashley Herring Blake's younger books. So I know that I will love.
I was going to say she previously wrote YA, right? Is mm-hmm. that
YA and middle grade.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, like I said, you got time.
Yep.
You got 5 months. You can take a look. All right. What else you have?
Speaking of things you've got time for, I have to say that I love The Lost City for many, many things. But one of the things that I love about The Lost City is that it has reminded people that we want adventure romance. And I am so excited for Raiders of the Lost Ark. Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Top-notch name, by the way. Top-notch name.
By Joe Segura. It is coming out in December. So you've got a while. But it's just, it's so good. I'm so excited.
People can watch The Lost City in the meantime. By the way, if you did not come across it, that is the Channing Tatum, Sandra Bullock film from, I think, last year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's very delightful. And the cover of Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of taps into the cover art for The Lost City. So, like, that's one of the reasons it made me think of that. But also, there are multiple adventure, treasure hunt, archaeology kind of books that are coming out over the next year or two. And I think that that played heavily into that. But anyway, Raiders of the mm-hmm. Lost Ark is about rival archaeologists on a dig. Well, on the quest for a dig. And then, of course, there's all other kinds of stuff that happen because there's always going to be shenanigans when there is a big dig that has, like, an unknown to it.
Mm-hmm.
We know that, like, real-life archaeologists are just, like, looking for a house or something. Mm-hmm. And this is, like, she's deep in the Mexican jungle searching for her ancestor who was an ancient Aztec warrior. So it's just like, it's a bit of a different feel to it. But she and the man who has been set as the expedition lead, even though she is the expert on the subject, have been rivals since grad school. So there's a lot going on here. But then there's, you know, action and adventure and probably explosions, I think.
One can only hope.
But there is also a little quote on the cover that says, "Your tent or mine." So.
Ooh.
So. We've got that to look forward to, too.
That is very exciting. That makes me also feel slightly less guilty about the fact that the last book I'm going to talk about comes out November 14th because December 25th is worse. and that is Next Door Nemesis by Alexa Martin. Folks who have been listening to the podcast for a while know that I am a big fan of Alexa Martin's books. I really liked her football series. It started with Intercepted. And this book is, it's a rivals to lovers story, which is not always my jam, but they are rivals for a homeowners association presidency. And I am at the exact right place in my life where I can appreciate what that means and just really be all in on it. It's also sort of a returning to your hometown for better or worse kind of situation. And I really like books like that. And whether they are books where it all works out great or books where the person really is not thrilled to be back where they grew up and it feels like they have regressed or whatever else. Mm-hmm. But I just really like the way that Alexa Martin writes essentially romantic comedy, but not, but with, like, there's definitely dimension to it. There's really a depth to her books and there's usually some kind of underlying tension or current or something. And she's put out a few books since her Intercepted series, but I kind of had fallen away. And so I'm really excited to see. I'm not 100% sure that they have been romance. And so I'm excited to jump back in to an Alexa Martin romance, which I will be doing on November 14th. And it will be Next Door Nemesis. And I will be reading about homeowners associations, and I will appreciate it. So that is where we are at this point.
Awesome.
Anything else you want to mention, Jess? I think you mentioned that there was maybe something else you were going to shout out.
There was one more that I wanted to talk about. I won't go into a huge description of it, but I want everyone to keep their eye and ear out for it because it sounds amazing. And it's called Thank You for Sharing by Rachel Renya Katz. And it's childhood friends to enemies to lovers. And it is about two Jews of color. And you don't really get books where both of those identities intertwine. So I'm really looking forward to reading that one.
And I will just shout out as well that Full Moon Over Freedom by Angelina M. Lopez, which we read her book earlier this year for Book Club. It was this year? I think it was this year. That one's also coming out, so keep an eye out for that. But yeah, all right. Well, I think we've given people enough to pre-order probably for the day.
Yes.
All right. Well, as always, thank you so much for listening. A huge thanks to our wonderful, wonderful audio editor, Jen Zink, who is patient with all of us, more so than any of you know. You can find us on email and social media. WhenInRomance@bookriot.com is the email. I'm almost afraid to share any of the social media because it seems like it changes by the day. But you can find me on Instagram and maybe eventually Threads. I don't know. Instagram for now, at Trisha Haley Brown. Jess, where are you these days?
I am definitely still on Instagram, Jess_is_reading. And I have the feeling I'm just going to be on Twitter until I open it and it doesn't open. Jess is reading all one word. And every once in a while, I post on the Clock app, Jess_is_reading. And there's probably some other stuff, but we'll give it a few weeks and see if I'm actually going back there.
See how it goes. Yeah. Well, it's ever changing. Mm-hmm. Please do rate and review the podcast. It helps other folks find it. As we mentioned before, check out First Edition. Check out all of Book Riot's many wonderful podcasts. Let us know what you're thinking about Reading Is Your Romance, what you're hoping we will talk about in our next book club book. Any other feedback or thoughts that you have, let us know what you're reading. Jess, anything else that we missed?
No, I think that's it. I hope everybody is staying whatever version of temperate is good for you, and happy reading.
And as an update, my neighbors are no longer in the parking lot.
Ah, darn.
But I'll let you know how it goes. Not today. We'll see. Tomorrow. Happy reading, everybody.